All right, so ready to dive into a topic that, well, might make some folks a little uncomfortable.
Oh, yeah, I think this one hits close to home for a lot of people.
Yeah, we're tackling violence in the Bible. Specifically, how do we square those kind of tough Old Testament stories, with the God of love, the God we see in Jesus?
It's a question that's been around for ages, centuries, really.
Right. And it's not just some heady theological debate either, like how we understand God and violence. It really shapes how we see conflict, how we approach justice, even in our own lives.
Absolutely.
So to help us navigate this kind of tricky territory, we're looking at a book by Kent Hodge called, and I love the title, Violence in the Scripture.
Straightforward, gets to the point.
Right, no messing around.
Yeah.
So right off the bat, Hodge throws out this idea of a Christian heirs.
Yeah, that definitely grabbed my attention.
Right. Christian heirs, what's he talking about there?
Well, Hodge argues that often we sort of blend the God of love, the God of forgiveness, with, well, a God of war.
So we want a God who's like tough.
Tough on our side, fighting our battles, even if it means, maybe getting a little Old Testament about it.
So like a God who's, I don't know, maybe a little less turn the other cheek and a bit more an eye for an eye.
Exactly. It's like we've made a Christianized version of Ares, the Greek god of war. We're okay with a god who's powerful, who fights, even if it means violence, as long as, it's directed at the bad guys.
And that's where things get dangerous, right?
That's exactly the danger Hodge points out. And he doesn't just keep it theoretical either. He brings up some pretty sobering historical examples, things like the Crusades, Christian armies waging war, all in the name of God.
Right.
Or even, Hitler's rise to power in a nation that at the time considered itself Christian.
Chilling examples for sure makes you think, have I ever caught myself justifying something I knew wasn't quite right because I thought, well, God's on my
I
side.
think we've all been there at some point. It's a question we have to honestly ask ourselves.
For sure. And it's at that point that Hodge dives into Jesus's teachings. He points out how Jesus directly challenged that eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth mentality that was so common in the Old Testament.
Yeah, it almost seems like a contradiction, right?
Right. If God was all about retribution in the Old Testament, then why would Jesus come along and just completely overturn it?
That's where things get fascinating. Hodge talks about this concept of progressive revelation.
Yeah.
The idea is that God was working within the existing cultural frameworks, like meeting people where they were at, but gradually revealing his true nature over time. The law, with all its focus on retribution, it served a purpose in that context.
So it's like God was using a system they understood, but always pointing towards something much, much bigger.
Exactly. And Jesus is that something bigger. He reveals this totally different approach to justice, one that's rooted in forgiveness, in mercy, in love.
Okay, so we're starting to see how Jesus kind of flips the script on this whole idea of violence.
He does.
But then Hodge goes a step further, right? He says that scapegoating, blaming innocent people for society's problems, that this isn't just wrong. It's not a godly concept at all. He calls it satanic.
Strong words.
Strong words. And he used some really powerful examples to make his point. Like the Pharisees, blaming the man born blind for his suffering. They couldn't accept that his blindness wasn't punishment from God, so they made him the scapegoat to protect their worldview.
That's a classic example.
Right. Or think about the cries to crucify Jesus to save the nation.
Talk about scapegoating.
Wow. And this isn't just ancient history either. Think about how often we see this today. Politicians, and they demonize entire groups of people. Immigrants, minorities, people with different beliefs. It's the same playbook, just a different century.
It's a tactic as old as time. And Hodge is calling us to see it for what it is, a tool of division, a tool of hatred, not something from God.
Right. So if scapegoating's out, what's the alternative? How do we actually break free from that pattern, from that cycle of blame, and actually live out Christ's call to love and serve?
Well, Hodge argues that it starts by looking inward. Examining our own hearts, our own tendencies to judge, to blame. It's about choosing to see the image of God in everyone, even those we might consider our enemies.
That's a tall order, especially in our world today. But speaking of challenging ideas, Hodge tackles another one, and it's a big one, sacrifice. He makes this radical claim that, according to Jeremiah 7:22, God never commanded Israel to offer sacrifices.
That's a head scratcher.
Right. It is. I mean, didn't God lay out all those instructions for sacrifice in the Old Testament? What's going on there?
Well, Hodge's take on this is really fascinating. He suggests that God allowed sacrifices not because he needed them, not because he was demanding them, but because they were already deeply ingrained in the culture. It was like God was working with what he had, a kind of divine adaptation, if you will.
Divine adaptation. Okay, I like that. So it's not that God was like sitting up there demanding sacrifices to appease his wrath. He was operating within a system that already existed, a system where sacrifice was seen as the way to please the gods, to keep things in balance.
That's Hodge's argument. And he was gradually using these practices, these rituals, to kind of shift human understanding mm-hmm. to point towards something much deeper, something that culminates in the ultimate sacrifice of Jesus.
Hold on. You mentioned something earlier about a ransom to Satan.
Oh, yes. That's part of how Hodge explains it. He suggests that because of sin, humanity was, in a way, under Satan's dominion. And God, in his love and mercy, he allowed the system of sacrifices as a kind of legal transaction, you could say, to secure Israel's freedom.
A ransom to Satan for Israel's freedom? That's a heavy concept.
It is, and it's one that Hodge doesn't fully flesh out, admittedly. But the idea is that it's not about appeasing Satan. It's about working within the existing framework to ultimately defeat him.
Okay, I'm starting to get it, but it definitely raises more questions.
Yeah.
And how does Jesus' sacrifice fit into all this?
Well, that's where things get even more mind-blowing. Hodge points to the Day of Atonement ritual. The thing is, in that ritual, it's actually God who's offering the sacrifice, not demanding it.
So it's like God is saying, I'm not the one who needs appeasing. I'm the one who's willing to give everything to set you free.
It completely flips the script on how we usually think about sacrifice.
It does. But it still leaves us with this question. How do we make sense of the violence in the Old Testament?
Hmm.
Is Hodge saying it was all just a misunderstanding, that God wasn't really involved?
Not necessarily. This is where Hodge introduces this really intriguing concept of a missiological God.
A missiological God. Okay, I'm intrigued. What's that all about?
It's this idea that God enters human culture, speaking our language, using symbols and concepts that we understand, and then gradually he transforms that culture from within.
A missiological God. So it's like God is on a mission, almost, adapting to our world to connect with us and ultimately lead us towards a better way.
Exactly. It's a way of understanding how God can work through flawed human systems, through our messiness, to accomplish his purposes. Like, think about how Jesus took the symbol of a king, a symbol of worldly power, of domination, and transformed it into servant leadership.
So it's not that God endorses the violence or injustice we see in the Old Testament, but he's working within that context, within that culture, to slowly reveal his true nature, his true character, and lead us to a higher way.
That's the idea. It's pretty radical.
It is. It makes you wonder, what misunderstood symbols are we clinging to today? You know, what's distorting our view of God?
That's something to think about.
For sure. We've got a lot more to unpack from Hodge's book, including his take on the law. He calls it a minister of death. And believe it or not, what we can learn from honor killings.
Buckle up. This deep dive is just getting started.
It is. Okay, so we're back and ready to go even deeper with Kent Hodge's Violence in the Scripture.
Deeper we go.
Right. Last time we were talking about this whole idea of a missiological God, God kind of adapting to our culture to meet us where we're at. But what about the Old Testament law with all its rules and regulations and stuff? How does that fit in?
Well, this is where Hodge really throws down a challenge. He argues that the law, it wasn't actually God's ideal for humanity. He calls it a minister of death.
A minister of death. Wait, hold on a second. I thought the law was supposed to be about, you know, righteousness, about living a holy life. How can it be a minister of death?
It's strong language for sure. But Hodge points to a verse in Ezekiel 20.25 where God actually says he gave statutes that were not good.
Not good. God said that.
He did. And the reason he gives is because of the stubbornness of human hearts. So the idea is that the law, with all its emphasis on punishment, on retribution, it was necessary, but it was a temporary measure. It wasn't the end goal.
So like it was more about keeping things from completely falling apart than it was about like laying out God's perfect will for us.
Right. Exactly. Hodge is saying the law was meant to restrain our destructive impulses, you know, to set some boundaries, but it wasn't the ultimate goal. He says Jesus actually fulfills and transcends the law by offering a new way of living, a way based on forgiveness, service, and love.
Okay, yeah, I'm starting to see the contrast there. It's a pretty different way of looking at it, though. It makes you wonder how much of like our current understanding of justice, how much of that is still stuck in that law mentality, focused on punishment instead of restoration.
That's a great question. And it leads us to one of the more surprising parts of Hodge's book, his discussion of honor killings.
Honor killings. I gotta admit, that one threw me off a bit. Honor killings are, well, they're horrific, usually violent against women, rooted in these really twisted cultural traditions. How does Hodge connect that with Jesus's teachings?
It's not a direct comparison, and Hodge acknowledges that. He's not condoning honor killings, obviously, but he uses them to illustrate this principle of self-correction rather than punishing others.
Okay, so instead of seeking revenge or retribution, the focus is more on, I don't know, taking responsibility for your own actions, making things right within your own community.
Right. And that's where Hodge brings in the idea of restorative justice. It's not about ignoring wrongdoing, but it shifts the focus from punishment to healing, from getting even to reconciliation.
It makes sense. But it seems incredibly difficult to actually put into practice, especially when we're talking about like really serious crimes. There's this natural desire for justice, for the person who did wrong to pay for what they did. How does restorative justice address that?
Well, it recognizes that true justice, it goes beyond just punishing the offender. It's about getting to the root of the harm that was done, repairing relationships, creating a system where everyone involved can move forward in a healthy way, victims, offenders, and the community.
It's a challenging concept, but I can
Yeah.
see how it lines up with Jesus's teachings,
Mm.
To love our enemies, to forgive those who hurt us. It's about breaking that cycle of violence, of revenge. Choosing restoration over retribution.
Exactly. And Hodge argues that we can apply this principle on a larger scale too. He uses the story of the Tower of Babel to illustrate this.
Oh, yeah, the Tower of Babel. Humanity trying to build this tower up to heaven, and God, getting annoyed and scattering everyone and creating all these different languages.
Right. It's often seen as a story about God punishing human ambition or opposing unity. But Hodge offers a different take. He suggests that God intervened not to punish unity itself, but to stop the oppressive system that was being used to build the tower.
Wait, are you saying the Tower of Babel was built on slave labor?
That's Hodge's suggestion. He sees it as a commentary on human greed and ambition, how we exploit others to achieve our own goals.
I've never heard it interpreted that way before. It really makes you think about all the ways we build our own towers today. Economic systems, political structures, even social movements.
Yeah.
Things that might look impressive, but are built on injustice, on exploitation.
It's a sobering thought. Hodge is challenging us to examine the foundations of our lives, of our communities. Are we building on a foundation of love, of justice, of equality? Or are we, even unintentionally, perpetuating these systems of oppression, of division?
It's something we all have to consider. And speaking of challenging ideas, Hodge doesn't shy away from those violent psalms, the ones that seem to contradict Jesus's message of peace and love.
It's one of the big tensions in the Bible, right? How can we reconcile verses calling for God's judgment, God's vengeance on enemies, with Jesus' commands to love our enemies, to pray for those who persecute
It
us?
almost feels like we're dealing with two completely different gods.
Right. And Hodge cautions against interpreting those psalms too literally. He argues that Jesus actually subverted those expectations. He took the violence of the world upon himself, demonstrating that true victory comes through suffering love, through forgiveness.
So instead of a God who conquers through military might, we see a God who conquers through self-sacrificial love. It's a whole different definition of power.
Exactly. Hodge points out that Jesus calls us to conquer our enemies, not through force, but through acts of reconciliation, acts of service. It's like Paul talks about, conquering through the spread of the gospel, a conquest of hearts, not of territory.
It's a beautiful vision. But it feels so counterintuitive in a world that so often rewards aggression, rewards violence. How do we even begin to live that out?
Well, that's where Hodge turns to the example of the early church. He highlights their commitment to pacifism even in the face of persecution.
Wait, the early Christians were pacifists. Like they didn't believe in any violence at all, even in self-defense.
That's what Hodge argues. He points to numerous examples of early Christians refusing to serve in the Roman military, even if it meant imprisonment or death. They saw their allegiance to Christ as incompatible with participating in violence.
That's incredibly radical, especially considering the dangers they faced. What can we learn from their example today? I mean, our world seems more divided, more violent than ever. That's a big question, the early church and their pacifism, inspiring, but it also feels so different from our world today. Like, how can we even begin to live up to that?
Yeah, it's definitely a challenge, but Hodge isn't saying we should be like naively pacifist, you know, like just ignore that there's real evil in the world. He's pointing to a different understanding of power,
mm-hmm.
of what it means to be victorious.
Okay, so then how do we reconcile that with all the violence, all the injustice we see around us constantly, wars, terrorism, crime? I mean, it never seems to end.
Mm-hmm.
How can pacifism even be a real response to all that?
Well, he's not saying we should be passive or just, you know, ignore evil and hope it goes away. It's more about choosing different weapons, you could say, a different way of fighting.
Like a different weapon. So what are those weapons? What does that even look like?
Well, think back to what we were talking about with Jesus, how he subverted expectations. He didn't overthrow Rome with an army. He conquered through love, through forgiveness, through a willingness to suffer for others.
So we're supposed to embody those same qualities, but that just seems so, I don't know, so small, so inadequate when you look at the scale of evil in the world.
Hodge would say it's not inadequate at all. Remember that ripple effect we talked about? Even small acts, they can have a huge impact. They create these waves of change that can transform people, communities, and eventually the whole world.
Okay, yeah, I'm starting to see the bigger picture. It's not about ignoring the problem of violence. It's about confronting it with a different kind of power, a power that comes from love, from compassion, from that willingness to lay down our lives for others.
That's it. That's the core of what Hodge is saying. He wants us to remember the violence in the Bible, it's mostly a reflection of us, of our brokenness, not of God's nature. God is, at his core, a God of peace, of healing, of restoration.
That's good to remember. But how do we actually live that out? I mean, what does it even look like to be a peacemaker in a world that just seems determined to tear itself apart?
Hodge doesn't give us, like, a step-by-step guide or anything, but he does leave us with this really powerful question. He asks, if God's goal is to transform the world through love, how can we be agents of that transformation in our own lives, our communities, even in the face of conflict and injustice?
Wow, that's a question I'll be thinking about for a while.
Yeah.
It really challenges us to rethink, well, everything, really.
Yeah.
What we think about power, about victory, about what it means to truly follow Jesus.
It does. And it reminds us that, you know, this journey towards peace, it's not a passive thing. It takes work. It takes courage. It takes a willingness to challenge the way things are and commit to that radical love and forgiveness we see in Christ.
Well said. So as we wrap up this deep dive into violence in the Bible, I hope you, our listeners, will join us in wrestling with these questions. Let's seek God's guidance and work together towards a world where his love and peace are the ultimate reality.
It won't be easy, but remember, even small acts, they can make a difference. Be that ripple. Be that spark of hope in a world that so desperately needs it.
Beautifully said. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive. Until next time, keep seeking, keep asking those tough questions, and most importantly, keep loving.